You are now going to listen to KAZI Book Review with Hopeton Head.
Lifelong friends Tina McElroy Ansah and Wanda Lloyd have collaborated as co-editors to publish Meeting at the Table, African American Women Write on Race, Culture, and Community. Ansah and Lloyd, who met while attending Spelman College, envisioned the essays as a balm and rallying cry for the nation's weary souls after the death of George Floyd. The essays include Keisha Lance Bottoms, who is mayor of Atlanta, actress Anika Noni Rose, and law professor Nashiri Rutledge, who joined us for the interview. Tina McElroy Ansah is a publisher, filmmaker, teacher, journalist, and the author of four novels. Wanda Lloyd is author of the memoir, Coming Full Circle from Jim Crow to Journalism, and a retired newspaper editor. Nashiri Rutledge is a law professor at South Texas College of Law, Houston, and an opinion columnist for USA Today. Tina McElroy Ansah, Wanda Lloyd, and Nashiri Rutledge, welcome to KAZI Book Review.
Thank you.
So, Tina, we're going to start with you as the publisher. All of you are Spelman University graduates. Power to the HBCUs.
Spelman College.
Oh, it's not Spelman College. More power to historically Black colleges and universities. And you have a publishing company, Tina, and I didn't realize you had a publishing company until I read your introduction. But the weariness that you talked about in your introduction, with all we've seen since COVID-19, the president since he came into office in 2017, it's really been the most tumultuous times of my adult lifehood in the political landscape and the cultural landscape. So, Tina, talk a little bit about how you and Wanda decided to move forward with this book.
Yeah, well, Wanda and I have known each other since we were freshman college roommates at Spelman, as a matter of fact. And we both chose writing and journalism for our careers. And so we were not good roommates, but we were very good friends. And we stayed in touch all these years. And Wanda's always been my cheerleader for my novels. And I've tried to be the same for her and appear at colleges and universities where she's taught, as well as at newspaper symposiums. So Wanda and I've been friends for years, and she's been keeping a little closer to me this year because of all the stuff that's been going on. And she's in Savannah, Georgia, and I'm on St. Simon's Island, Georgia. And I called her one day in June, and I just asked, as always, how you doing? And she said, very honestly, Wanda is not one to complain. She says, I'm not doing really well. She says, I'm depressed, I'm tired, I'm confused, I'm weary. She had a whole list of things. And I realized I was the same way. And we were coming close to being hopeless about this whole situation. Mm-hmm. It was right after George Floyd. And we had seen that tape. Everybody had, over and over. And we just felt, what could we do? And we started this conversation. We said, well, we're not going to get out there and protest. We're too old for that. And there's COVID. And so we were just talking about what we do. And I had just written a little forward to Wanda's beautiful memoir, Coming Full Circle. And we had worked together, sort of on that. And I said, wait a minute, I have a publishing company. And we said, well, maybe we should do a book. And it just started from there, Hopeton. It just started from there. We started talking about, what would it be? Would it be essays? Would it be? And then from that one germ, from that one weary conversation in June, we now have a book. 15 brilliant essays. I wrote the introduction to Meeting at the Table, African American Women Write on Race, Culture, and Community. And we started we came up with this idea. We had the inception for the idea was in June 14th, and we published the book. The pub date was November 30th. And so it's unheard of course, that a book with 15 contributors, two co-editors. Wanda and I co-edited the book, and Wanda also wrote a beautiful, very interesting essay. It's also for the book. So it started from there. It started from there, and we just start pulling it together. I have a publishing company, as you pointed out, Down South Press, which was started in 2007. I started it as an independent publishing company. So we wore a lot of hats, and we got it done. Black women get it done, Hopeton. Get it done.
Well, I will brag that I have three daughters and no sons.
There you go. All right.
So Wanda, the book kicks off, I mean, it's like a murderer's row of writers. And you start off with the mayor of Atlanta, Keisha Lance Bottoms. Yeah. A prayer for my children. I'm a father. I believe, Wanda, you're a mother. And Najari, you're a mother. I'm not sure about Tina, but I have thought long and hard about my children and what the future looks like and what they need to be prepared for. So Wanda, talk a little bit about the decision to choose the mayor of Atlanta, Keisha Lance Bottoms, and her essay, A Prayer for My Children, as the very first essay you read in the book.
Well, actually, the essayists are lined up by alphabetically. So she became first, not just because she's the mayor of Atlanta, but because her last name starts with a B. So that's the reason she's first. It just sort of worked out that way. And, you know, we didn't have an A to put in there. So that's why she's first. But it really was a really good way to open the book, not just because she's the mayor of Atlanta, but because her essay is so beautiful. And it just happened that it's a prayer. It didn't start out as a prayer. I don't believe Tina actually worked with her on her essay, but it evolved into a prayer because she was weary also. I mean, just think about what Keisha Lance Bottoms was going through as we were all writing our essays and both of us were editing this book. She was the mayor of the city that had COVID as a major influence. She, you know, there were protests in her city. She was on TV all the time, just helping people, putting in perspective all the things that were going on in her city and in her life. And she became a spokesperson for the nation.
Well, she and her family had COVID as well.
And during the process, they had COVID, which, you know, delayed her writing a little bit. But that
was
a good thing.
And she was sued personally.
But that was a good thing that it was delayed, because as she was thinking about what to write, her thinking evolved and she was very concerned about her family. She had to get her kids, the kids, I think there were two children of hers, at least two, maybe three, who did not have COVID. And so they evacuated their home very quickly and went to stay with her mother, I believe, so that she and her husband and her son could recover from COVID. So that's how the book started. And it really turned out to be a prayer and a beautiful way to start this book.
So Najari, you're a former prosecutor, you're a law professor at South Texas College of Law, and you're calling for more Black prosecutors. And one of the lines in your essay that really caught my attention is when you wrote, when you told a date in college that you wanted to be a prosecuting attorney, he responded, "So you want to put Black men in jail?" And in the heated debate that followed, she asked, "Well, who would you have fight for crime victims who are Black?" So talk about the importance. And I get this. On the one hand, we see the criminal justice system as oppressing African-Americans, male and female. But on the other hand, if we don't have Black prosecutors, who are we giving our fate to?
I think I froze for a second. What was the last thing you said?
If we don't have Black prosecutors, who are we giving our fate to?
Exactly. I mean, the criminal justice system is very important in this country. And so if we think about what it would be like to have a criminal justice system that was completely the same, all the prosecutors look the same, all the officers look the same, trying to service our communities, that would also be a problem. But even though people talk about the need for criminal justice reform, we forget about the fact that we need people in the room where it happens, right? We need people to help make policy. We need people who can relate to Black crime victims and Black defendants. You know, in the Code of Criminal Procedure in the state of Texas, it talks about the job of the prosecutor, and it is to see that justice is done. So we need someone to care about all the parties, and diversity is important to seeing that all parties are considered.
Can I say something about, especially
in sure.
that essay, is that one would think that if you got, you know, 15 Black women together who can write, they would be all sort of the same viewpoint. And I'm so moved in some ways, but so taken aback how different viewpoints are. and how much we have to teach each other. I mean, I learned, I'm just thinking of Najari's essay, you know, which opened, I mean, it's personal, it's emotional, it's flat out, it's the facts, you can tell she's a lawyer, but it takes you to so many places. And Najari's essay opened my eyes about Black prosecutors. I was kind of like her date. I wasn't as bad as her date, but I was kind of questioning that, you know? And she answered right. the questions for me. That's one of the things I love about all these essays. These are smart women who had something to say and knew where they were going with it. You know, they knew it was a personal essay. It was about them, but they had something to share. There's just so much wisdom in this book. It really wanted out of the people who, curated and brought it together. But it surprised me even.
We even talked early on, Tina and I, about the different the focus of this book, the essays, and how we wanted people who are very different. You know, we wanted someone from law enforcement. We wanted someone from government. We wanted someone who comes from the faith community. We wanted people from media. We wanted activists. We wanted just, you know, a different viewpoint. So we weren't trying to do a book of all Spelman women or all lawyers or all journalists or all writers. You know, we talked about that at length. How do we diversify this book as much as possible? If we gave ourselves a deadline to get the book produced. And so, you know, Tina will tell everybody who will listen, I set up spreadsheets and I made a timeline. And said, okay, if we're going to do this by November, we got to get, you know, we got to get the essays in place at a certain date, and we got to get the editing done by a certain time. But if we had had more time, we would have had more essays and an even richer list of diversity in terms of the focus of our writers. But what really drew me to Najah's perspective of diversity in law enforcement is I spent most of my career in the newspaper business, and a lot of my time was spent on helping newspapers and the news media industry understand the value of diversity and why you cannot just have all of one thing. You cannot have all white people. You cannot have all Black people. You cannot have, you know, all women. You cannot have all men. You cannot have all old people or young people. And so that's really what excited me about Najari's perspective, because I have had that experience of you know, being a champion for diversity in the work that I did. And so I applaud her for that perspective. And she and I talked about, I don't know, three or four different ways her essay could go. And I'm so glad we landed on this one.
Okay, so Najari, I have you here with your two editors. So I'm going to put you on the spot here.
Oh.
So what was that process like working with Wanda and Tina and working through the different iterations from where you started with your idea for the essay to where you ended up with?
It was an amazing process working with such accomplished Black women. They were very supportive. I felt very honored to have a role with it. I worked more directly with Wanda. And, you know, the first time she was like, keep going. And I appreciated that.
That sounds like her.
Yeah. And she was like, well, what about, I had just published an op-ed with USA Today. And she was like, well, what about, you know, you mentioned something that resonated and then this. And so she guided me very well. And it just came. I think I had like 2 weeks. I didn't have a lot of time. But I felt so honored to have an opportunity to be a part of this important work that I was just focused on getting it done. And I really hope it turned out well. But I wanted to do justice not only to the memory of James Byrd, but to really encourage people to see Black prosecutors in a different light.
I will tell you that your essay hit me hard, because like Tina, I never thought of the Black prosecutors and the importance of having Black prosecutors to ensure that justice is done and that we have diversity there. I really never thought of it. And that's really what I love about this. The essays are so emotionally powerful for me. And Wanda, your essay about your husband being 6'5" and going door to door for signatures and no one wanting to open the door until you said, take your daughter.
Take Shelby. And, oh, isn't that just the most, that's one of the most powerful sentences in that, in her essay. And it's a very powerful essay. The fact that she would know that, put it together and say, you know, well, I'm going to make you a test case. You know, take her out. I know this work. It was one, it was very powerful.
So I want to talk about writing that essay.
Well, I knew from the start that I wanted to be one of the essayists for this book. And I had so many stories to tell. And also I had just completed or published my memoir, Coming Full Circle, which you and I had the pleasure of talking together when that was published. And so then, as I was on tour, a virtual tour by then, I was starting to get a lot of questions from interviewers and in programs about, well, what other stories did you not tell? And so my process in writing the essay was to, first of all, think about something, some stories that I didn't put in my memoir, but stories that affected me deeply, me personally, because my memoir really was focused on my career, my background in Jim Crow, of course, because it's coming full circle from Jim Crow to journalism, but about my background in Jim Crow and also my career. But these are stories that I wanted to bring out, stories that were personal. So I started with a personal story about moving into a house in a mostly white neighborhood, mostly, quite frankly, Jewish neighborhood in Savannah after I retired from the newspaper business, and how a police officer showed up at the door. So somebody called this police officer and said, there's some Black people in that house. You better go check on it. So that's how I started the essay. And then my process was, the stories came pouring out, just like they did when I was writing the memoir. The stories just came pouring out, and I started making a list of all the little stories I could tell to come to the realization that, you know, I think my Tina and I talked about the name of my essay, Racism, WTF, because I used that in the essay. You know, I said, this guy came to my house. What the F, you know, why would he do that?
The WTF shocked me and caught my attention.
Hey, me too.
I think it caught me attention of anybody that knows me personally, because I don't really use that language, but it really enraged me that this had happened.
It showed just how stunned you were by this, and how outraged, and all those emotions that Black folks all know, you know, in a situation, you have these flood of emotions, you know, and you have to kind of decide, which one am I going to pick out, you know, now. That's what I'm saying. You know, there are so many small moments as well as large moments in these essays in which women, and myself included, you know, share something that's very intimate, share something they maybe have never shared with anybody before, or share something because they wanted to share. Not one of our essays ever held back, which kind of surprised me. They really didn't. I mean, they may have been going in, you know, another direction than perhaps we wanted them to go in, or what, but they, none of them held back. They were all very open and transparent and honest, and you know, we don't take that for granted. We appreciate that. It's very difficult to be that honest on the page when you're talking about something as personal as your image, who you are, not just your race, but your not just your gender, but who
and you are. Your role as a woman, your role as a mother, your role as a professional woman, which, you know, takes it to a whole nother level. Being a prosecutor at you know, earlier in your life, being a professor, being a writer on a national stage, being the mayor of a city, being the executive editor of a newspaper. I mean, we are women who, most of us, being a CEO, we have a CEO, most of us are holding roles that are non-traditional for women. And then to be a Black woman on top of it, we all had amazing stories to share.
Yes.
Tina.
Yeah.
I'm assuming you edited Wanda Lloyd's essay.
I did indeed. I had that.
How easy was it, or how hard was it?
Oh my goodness. It's like riding a bike. You know, Wanda and I, between the two of us, we have a 100 years of experience in journalism. And that's not just in reporting, but it's in reporting and writing and editing and running a newsroom and, you know, the whole gamut. So it was a real joy to read. As she said, she surprised me. It's wonderful as an editor when your writer surprises you. That's like a little gift. And so she surprised me, you know, with the, because she had the headline and it was in the story. When I got to it in her essay, I was like, what? And she was kind of sitting in the corner waiting for me, waiting to hear from me, you know, when I got to that part, she knew I was going to be, but it was because we worked together. We had never worked literally together on anything until her memoir. And I was her, like, you know, I wasn't the director, I was just her encourager. I was her hype woman, you know, come right, we're going to do this. Okay, no, we're not going to go that way. Let's go this way. You know, so we did not know we could work well together until we had just, but the last 2 years, we discovered that we worked very well together. Wanda doesn't like me to say it, but it's like, you know, this is the church and this is the steeple. This is me and Wanda. We're so different. But we fit together and we're solid when we fit together like that.
And Colton, you should also know that Tina and I were not physically together. We were, 80 miles apart the entire time we worked on not only my memoir, but this book. We didn't get together until just before Thanksgiving, physically.
November, I believe, 17th.
you came and visited. But we did everything by Zoom and by telephone and by text message and by email. We talked 4, 5, 6 times every day throughout the process. We were physically separated, but we were in sync in putting this book together.
Okay, started the idea for this. The inception was June the 12th. And by October the 16th, we had all our essays. They weren't all edited. It wasn't ready to go to press. But in those 4 months, August, September, October, in those 4 months, we had gotten a book together. I mean, you know, when things are right, Hopton, they're right. They get righter and righter and righter. You know, it's like a love affair. You know, if it's good, it gets better and better and better. But if it's wrong, you know, oh God, it gets wrong. And then you find out he's cheap. And then you find out, you know, he doesn't give good gifts. It gets wronger and wronger. What we found out with this, you know, what we found out with this project, it got better and better and better. You know, the people that we chose were the right writers, the right thinkers, you know, the right contributors. There are lots of folks who, you know, we approach because we cast a wide net because we didn't have much time. We didn't know who was going to respond or not. So we cast a wide net. And so we had people, you know, Ava DuVernay said, you know, I don't have any more, you know, space to do this, but, you know, Onward, which is her favorite, her favorite acclamation to women, Onward. Stacey Abrams didn't have time to do it, but she was, you know, on our side. So what we found out is that we just had an embarrassment of riches. We really did. We, all these brilliant Black women were at our, and so what we also found out is that, like in life, it gets better and better. The right people found us and we found the right people. The right
people. Let me jump in here real quick.
People. Yeah.
Yeah. And let me jump in here because, Naudrey, I want to ask you, what impact, I mean, working with Wanda, working with Tina, all the people that contributed to the book, what impact has that had on you as a professor, as a lawyer, as a mother? And she, I will confess, I sent an email to Naudrey and said, are you working on a book?
I think the best word is inspiration. This has been such an amazing inspiration to actually work with these two dynamic power brokers and to see, because I didn't have the privilege of seeing the other contributors' writings until I got the book a few weeks ago. And everything's so beautifully written. And it's amazing how different and diverse we are, which is what I loved about Spelman. There's so much diversity in Black women. And in spite of that diversity, we all have such similar stories. And so it was so powerful. So I would say this really inspired me as a professor, as a mother, as a writer, to keep pressing forward, and that I have a lot to say and I want my voice to continue to be heard. So I'm just grateful for the opportunity to be in the company of such amazing sisters.
We only have a few minutes left here, but I did want to talk about the essay Treated Like Royalty by Anika Noni Rose, and specifically this line from the essay, which just blew me away. Breonna Taylor was a sleeping beauty who will never wake. Oh my God.
Wasn't that the most beautiful? And you can imagine, I was blown away. I didn't know that she could write. We were friends. We had been like maybe Facebook or Twitter friends. That's how I met her. And we just, you know, sort of got to know each other, just talking, you know. She looked at me as an, you know, older woman, as a, you know, auntie kind of. I hesitate to use that word because I don't want to be called auntie. If I'm your auntie, you know I am. Otherwise, don't call me that. We just were sort of getting to know each other. And in talking with her and seeing her tweets, I thought, wow, you know, she looks like, she sounds like she can write, you know. I really wanted that story of the princess, of the our princess, our Disney princess. You know, as she says, she's the one that we call our princess. Tatia is our princess. And so I wanted to get that story, but I didn't know whether she was interested in that. You know, people don't want to be typecast, all kinds of reasons. And I mean, she was all over it and actually had been writing about this and had, you know, in her own personal writings. So she, her premise was, you know, what if all our little boys and girls, all our young Black men and women were treated like Disney princesses and princes. And she goes through, you know, as you said, you know, that Brianna was a sleeping beauty, and
let me go ahead and read this quote from her essay here real quick. So she wrote, and of course she was the first Black princess in Disney movies playing Princess Tiana. And she says, I know one thing Princess Tiana has done is allow brown skinned girls to see themselves as regal and their curls worthy of their crown. And the conflict over Black women wearing their hair in its natural state is just appalling. It is absolutely appalling.
Hope, you bring up a good point, Hope. And, you know, I think that this book should be an inspiration to all young women, but especially African-American women. Just on this show alone, we've got, five daughters among us. And so we really care about women. So when I wrote my memoir, when I wrote my essay, I really was thinking about my daughter. I wanted her to have the message and people in her generation and younger, what it was like for me being a Black woman, being a mother, being a professional person, being a wife, being a neighbor. And I'm sure that Najari thinks about that when, you know, I've seen her, some of her social media posts with her daughters and how important it is for her to be a role model. I'm sure you care about that with your daughters, Holton. And so I think sharing should be an inspiration for young people, especially young women, and of course, young African-American women.
One last thing I want to cover quickly, and I really don't want to cover it quickly, but I'm betting, Wanda, that this essay was something you looked at closely. Racism Drives Me to Succeed by Sheila Brooks, who wrote her dissertation on Lucille H. Bluford, a publisher and editor of the Black Weekly Kansas City column. What really captured my attention with that essay is when she writes about growing up angered by racism and remember the riots in her hometown of Kansas City after the MLK assassination in 1968 and being taunted by having an absent father. I had an absent father. I know exactly how it feels. But she took that anger and it drove her to succeed as a television reporter, producer, and news director, documentary producer, and an entrepreneur. So Wanda, talk a little bit about Sheila Brooks.
Mm-hmm. Well, I met Sheila when I was a senior editor at USA Today, and I tried to hire her as a journalist at USA Today. And brought her in to interview. And I don't remember why she didn't take the job, whether we didn't make the offer or she didn't accept the offer. But we became friends, not just because I met her at that time. She had just come from Texas and moved to the Washington area for graduate school, I believe. But also she married one of my friends and fellow editors at USA Today because she met him in that interview. And so Sheila and I have been friends and stayed close for many, many years. She actually gave me a going away party when I left USA Today and moved south again. And I so admire her for, this is the 30th anniversary year of her company, SRB Communications. And I so admire her for the journey she had from journalism, from all the roles she had as a producer, and the journey and the discrimination she felt all along the way. And she and I had that in common, that there were roles that we both tried to have in our careers that someone said to us, you're not good enough. You're not smart enough. You're not, you don't have the depth of experience. You're not, this is not the path that you can take. And how many of us have heard that, whether we were little kids in school or we were in college and someone said, well, you shouldn't major in, I don't know, medicine or math or political science because you're not smart enough. And Sheila took all of her adversity, having grown up in Kansas City, having gone through the riots after the death of Martin Luther King and all the things that she experienced, and she started her own company. She managed to have control over her own destiny. And now she has this amazing company in Washington, D.C., in the heart of the area where there are lobbyists and advertising agencies and marketing firms. And I said to Sheila, I bet you've had some adversity even being a CEO. And I gave her some examples of the adversity I assumed she had had. And she said to me, all of the above, I've gone through all the discrimination that you have outlined here. And so that's how we came up with her, the focus of her essay. And she did an amazing job. Just like Nashiri, we did everything on Zoom and on the phone. We never, you know, sat down together, but we worked on this essay together, and I'm so proud of it.
Tina McElroy, Ansa, Wanda Lloyd, Nashiri Rutledge, and they are, Tina and Wanda, are the co-editors of Meaning at the Table, African-American Women Write on Race, Culture, and Community. And Nashiri Rutledge out of Houston, Texas, is one of the contributing essayists and writers to this Meeting at the Table. This has been a wonderful conversation. Thank you so much. This is a book I want all my daughters to read. This is a wonderful book. Thank you so much for being guests on KZL Book Review.
No, thank you for having us.
Thank you so much.
The book can be purchased at downsouthpress.com.
Thank you for listening to this podcast edition of KAZI Book Review. I'm Hopeton Hay. Subscribe to us under Hopeton Hay Podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and many other sources of podcasts. If you like this interview, be sure to rate it. Rate it a 5. Give us 5 stars. You can follow KAZI Book Review on Twitter under @KAZIBooks. You can also follow us under Facebook under KAZI Book Review with Hopeton Hay. And you can also follow us on Instagram under KAZI_book_review. Thank you once again for listening to the KAZI Book Review podcast.